Welcome into another episode of the Baseball America College Baseball Podcast. My name is Jacob Rudner, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Peter Flaherty. And Peter, this is going to be one of my favorite episodes of the entire season because after long last, we have college baseball. The season has begun. We are one weekend into the year. We're one top 25 into the year. You and I both got out to go on the road and see some games that mattered after months of what felt like watching, you know, teams play against each other and trying to, you know, make takeaways from action that didn't exactly count towards the road to Omaha. So we are officially back. And I will ask you this, you know, before we say anything here, how are you? What was your experience like on the road? And I guess the excitement for you on just the return of college baseball and to finally be evaluating things that are important to us.
Excitement's through the roof. We've been talking about this past weekend for what feels like months, because it has been months, and to actually have performances and games and storylines to talk about and to have it be that way all the way through June is such a great feeling. It was the MLB Desert Classic. It's always a great event. It was the same this year with a strong crop of teams. We'll get into the action a little bit later, but it was an awesome time. And not to get too TMI, I wouldn't wish the neurovirus on anyone. It threw a big haymaker at yours truly this weekend, but even that couldn't hamper my excitement about opening weekend. So a lot to dive into, a lot of action as always, and the start of what I think is going to be a fantastic season.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And like you said, there is quite a bit for us to get through in our opening season show. I think the best way for us to get started, Peter, is just to kind of go over some big takeaways here. There was a lot of action that took place, you know, throughout opening weekend, several ranked matchups, some big wins, I would say some really big losses. I would preface this by saying, though, one thing to keep in mind, and this is going to be kind of a relevant theme throughout this entire show when it comes to takeaways and our rankings, it's 1 week, okay? This is not college football. It's not, you know, 1/12 of the way through the season after one weekend. There's a really long way to go. So as Peter and I discuss some of these things, I do suggest keeping in mind that these aren't end-all be-all takeaways. I think that there were some really interesting first impressions that we got, Peter, but I don't know that anything truly conclusive can come from three games or four games, depending on how many teams played of college baseball. It's a really long season, and we are trying to keep things pretty moderate in terms of how conclusive we're being with our early season takeaways. But I'm going to turn the floor over to you here. Give me a couple things that stood out to you from week one, things you saw just across the country that stood out to you, and maybe some things that you'll be keeping an eye on moving forward.
Yeah, so to preface the segment of what we saw, none of it is going to be what we ourselves saw in person. So I'm going to refrain from talking about the Desert Classic, and Jacob won't be talking about the Shriners Children's College Showdown. So to start off, and just to whip through it, Florida State's pitching was outstanding, particularly on the Friday and Sunday games. It was a big-time tone-setter outing for lefty Jamie Arnold. One of the buzziest, if not the buzziest name in the offseason when it comes to the draft cycle, certainly in contention to be the first starting pitcher off the board in July. He cruised through six innings, allowed one hit, struck out eight, no walks. John Abraham slammed the door with three shutout innings in which he also looked fantastic, allowed just one hit, struck out eight of his own. And then on Sunday, Wes Mendez, the transfer, he had an excellent fall. It was announced that he earned his way into the weekend rotation, and his first start was also excellent. Struck out eight across five shutout innings, and then the combination of Hudson Rowan and Brady Lauk slammed the door with three shutout innings. So they looked fantastic the entire weekend against JMU. JMU is always a solid team, and I think that the depth on Florida State's pitching staff really stands out. We heard about it a lot over the offseason, particularly with Jamie Arnold leading the charge. Cam Leiter, it doesn't really sound super encouraging as to whether or not we'll see him this year, but to have a guy like Wes Mendez, if you can count on him for five, six, seven solid innings as your Sunday guy, that's a weapon that not a lot of teams have. And I think the cherry on top and the supplement to that is that Florida State's offense is a unit that I'm particularly a fan of. I think it's a balanced group. They can beat you in a number of ways, handful of bat to ball guys with, you know, Jackson West, Gage Harrelson, and then you you throw in power guys like Max Williams, Miles Bailey. It's a balanced group. It's deep across all facets. I think Coach Jarrett finally has this deal performing like a well-oiled machine down in Tallahassee. So that was my first takeaway. The second was Wake's offense was just exceptional. And I think if you're listening to this, you might be like, you know, Peter, sure, it was impressive, but, you know, look at the teams they played a little bit. Yes, very true and valid. But I think, you know, when you put up, whether it was, I think, 62 or 63 runs across a four-game sample, I don't care who you're playing. Baseball is baseball. It's the hardest sport on the planet. And this group came out, I guess, you know, they came out swinging. It was led by Merrick Houston, who had the best performance of any hitter in the country. He went 10 for 14 with a double, 3 home runs, and 13 RBIs. There's a lot of talk this fall about how Merrick had transformed his body and put on 10 to 15 plus pounds of really good weight. Looked every bit of it in the box this weekend, more physical, more explosive, drove the baseball. Hard to really put too much stock into a 3-game sample, but you know, that's as good of a 14 at bat stretch, I think, as you can have. And then Ethan Conrad as well, one of the top transfers in the country, 8 for 15, 6 of his 8 hits went for extra bases, including 5 doubles, 10 RBIs of his own. And when all was said and done, I think 14 Demon Deacon hitters drove in at least one run and 15 registered at least one hit. So just a complete and total effort from the Deeks. And then it also translated over to the mound. Matthew Dallas and Logan Lunsford both turned in scoreless starts in which they're attacking the zone, flashed some stuff. And their bullpen was also solid. So those are my two prime ones. And then the last one was, because I'm going to take advantage of you not being able to talk about the college, the Shriner Showdown, and say I was impressed with Texas. I think that, you know, we had our own questions coming into the season about Texas, especially, you know, how they would look on the mound, how they're going to win 27 outs consistently, what that rotation was going to look like with Jared Spencer leading it, making the jump from almost exclusively a bullpen guy at Indiana State. He split time last year, but the majority of his appearances came in relief. Now he takes on the role of a Friday starter in the SEC. It's, again, one start. We're talking about small samples for everyone here, but Jared Spencer and Luke Harrison both looked excellent this weekend down in Arlington, had scoreless starts of 5 2/3 and 6 1/3 innings, respectively. And then offensively, Adrian Rodriguez, Max Ballou, and Will Gasparino were all excellent, especially Gasparino. It looks like a cleaner setup and cleaner operation in the box. Last year, he's kind of getting out of sync and disconnected with his long levers at times, led to a lot of swing and miss. Again, 14 at bat sample, but it was a cleaner look, a more direct path to contact this weekend. Freshman Adrian Rodriguez looks, you know, he looks like he's going to be a mega dude, and he performed really well. And Max Ballou, similar breath, Big 12 player of the year in 24, off to a really hot start. So, those are kind of my three big ones. We'll get into more as the pod goes on, but those were the three biggies.
Yeah, I mean, I think that just to speak to Texas here briefly before we get into the stuff that we saw in person, certainly was impressive to see what the Longhorns were able to do in their first weekend under Jim Schlossnagel. And we did have questions going into the season, so you know, definitely positive to see them deliver. My takeaways are similar. A lot of teams that really impressed me. I think that Tennessee, and you know, for people listening this, you might roll your eyes collectively when you know I come on here and say, well, Tennessee's good. Of course they're good. But I think Tennessee is, they proved something to me this weekend. And I think in today's day and age of college baseball, with the amount of roster turnover that exists, both in terms of the transfer portal and you're bringing in so many new guys, and just the amount that Tennessee lost last season to the draft, you always do run the risk of kind of taking a step back. And to me, it didn't look like they did that. And granted, they were playing, you know, Hofstra, so the caliber of competition is low. But you watch the operation, and I think that you can take something away from it. Liam Doyle especially, I thought, was superb. You and I have talked already plenty about how great his fastball is. That played exactly as we expected it to. He racked up 11 strikeouts in basically a perfect 5-inning debut. They had seven guys throughout the weekend hit home runs. Dean Curley, Hunter Ensley, Rhys Chapman, Levi Clark, Andrew Fisher, Blake Grimmer, and Hunter High. So all those guys look really good. I'll zero in on Dean Curley. You and I really like him. We have him as one of our top prospects in this upcoming draft. He certainly looked the part over the course of this weekend. The pop was there. You know, plays a really clean shortstop. And one thing that I also thought was interesting is that he was able to move around quite a bit. And Tennessee did something that, you know, Tony Vitello, before the season got going, said that they were going to throw a couple defensive looks out there early on in the season, and not just against Hofstra, but over the course of the next couple weeks, because they wanted to kind of figure out what they had in their guys. They think that they have guys positionally who can play multiple spots. Andrew Fisher is one of them. We saw him play third and first base over the weekend. Curley played a couple different positions. Gavin Keelan played second and shortstop. So, you know, versatile, really potent offense. Liam Doyle was impressive, but so was really the rest of their staff. There was nobody who was, you know, less than solid from a pitching perspective, and that stood out to me. And the team right after them in the rankings, number four, Arkansas, I thought was kind of interesting this weekend. Not necessarily the most dominant wins, maybe like we expected against a team like Washington State. They took them to extra innings in game one. It was a 3-2 win in 10. Game two, it was much better. They played two doubleheader on Friday and beat Washington State 14-2 in the second. And then on Saturday, only 5-2 was the win. And the takeaway for me there is that we are going to see another great Arkansas pitching staff. I mean, that was not a question going into the season. Gabe Gackle, Gage Wood, and Zach Root were fantastic. Yesterday, Landon Beidelschies was, I thought, very good. So this is a unit that is going to continue its success even after losing Hagan Smith. The questions for me that persist are, how good is this offense going to be? Last season, Arkansas really wasn't able to do enough offensively. That was what kind of bit them when they got to the postseason and prevented them from making a deeper run than they were maybe capable of. And I think that this weekend left me wondering exactly how much of an issue that could still be. Obviously, the 14-run game was a sign of what could be. I think Rocco Pepi, who we've talked about on this podcast a couple times, is somebody who could kind of lead the charge. Brent Iredale is another person who I think could lead the charge from kind of generating a little bit more pop and production for this lineup. Obviously, Alloy, the shortstop, is there and can do good things with the stick as well. But there's going to need to be a lot more cohesion and consistent production for Arkansas to achieve its maximum goal. And then, like you did with me, because we refrained from talking about teams we saw in person, I'll highlight the Anteaters. I thought UC Irvine had a really loud weekend in Arizona. They got a 10-5 win over a very solid Nebraska team, which, as we'll talk about later, is kind of one of those squads that's reasonably close to the top 25. Followed it up with an 18-4 win over New Mexico. And then the game that was really stand out to me is they lost 9-8 to Vanderbilt in what felt like a super regional to me. That was a great game, very back and forth. They had a 7-5 lead going into the eighth before Riley Nelson hit a grand slam to give Vanderbilt a lead and never relinquished. And I thought that they looked really good. So, you know, exciting stuff, I think, for Irvine. That's one of those teams that is going to be able to contend for the Big West title. But I think, you know, regardless, as you and I have talked about, that is a conference that stands to probably be a multi-bid league between Irvine and Santa Barbara. So those were my takeaways. I'm going to now ask you for a couple more takeaways, or, you know, one big one if you want to just focus on something huge here, from stuff you saw. And just to remind our listeners, Peter, you were at the Desert Classic in Arizona. I was at the Shriners Children's College Showdown in Arlington, Texas at Globe Life Park. Talk to me, Peter, about what you saw, what impressed you with your eyes sitting from the stands in the press box.
Yeah, I think the team that won the weekend in my eyes was UC Irvine. You hit on it briefly, and it was actually a perfect transition into where I'm going, but I was very impressed with the Anteaters. And I think what makes this weekend even more impressive for them is they were without their best hitter in potential top five round draft pick, Anthony Martinez. He missed this weekend. They doubled up a really good Nebraska team on opening day, 10-5. That was a game that was never really in doubt. They took it to New Mexico. And then the Vanderbilt game that they lost 9-8, you know, that was a game that they should have won. Riley Nelson put a really good swing at a ball in the eighth inning, hit a game-winning grand slam, lifted Vanderbilt to a win. But I was very, very impressed as a whole with UC Irvine. That offense can really, really swing it. They got contributions from a handful of veterans and guys like Chase Call, who had a solid weekend, Will Bermudez, and then the transfers, Colin Yeaman. He put a really good swing on a ball in a game that I saw. It was an elevated fastball, drove it to right center for a basis clearing triple, and that ignited UCI's offense against Nebraska. And I guess in a similar breath, Jacob McCombs, they all really swung the bat well up and down the lineup. It was a balanced effort. They got contributions from nearly everyone. And then the pitching staff was solid as well. Ricky Ojeda was probably the best guy that I saw. You can make the argument that from a sheer like a pitchability, he's their best arm. Riley Kelly has the best stuff on the staff. Ricky Ojeda is the best pitcher on the staff, if that's making any sense to, hopefully that's making sense to the listeners. But advanced strike thrower, knows how to sequence, knows how to attack guys, can land his entire arsenal for strikes. Looking at the rotation further, Trevor Hanson had a decent start, and so did Jack Ross. So, I mean, once Tony Martinez comes back, that lineup gets a massive boost and gets that much more deep and that much more talented. Like, that's a nine that's going to, and we saw it this weekend, but that's a nine that just wears opposing pitching staffs down over the course of the game. Like, that is a really, really tough lineup to get 27 outs against and win 27 outs against, especially with the pitching staff, if they can just continue to attack the zone and get guys out, which they did this weekend. So, we were talking about it on, I believe, the preseason pod, and then also off air, but like with Riley Kelly, like that's the potential X factor here with the pitching staff. Big time stuff, huge arm strength, strikes have been a bugaboo. If he can compete around the zone, like it looks legit. He's got to go out and do it, which he hasn't done yet, but man, if he can put it together, it's a really, really tough look on opposing hitters. So UCI, unsurprisingly, is going to be one of the better teams out west as the season goes on. I'd be surprised if they kind of fall off here a little bit, but very, very impressed with the depth. Coach Orloff has done an excellent job. And they can hang with anyone, and they bring the energy too. It was really fun. That fan base, one of our coworkers, Jesus Cano, got a great picture of the anteater that they bring, the opposing fan, the UCI fans bring to every game. I forget the name, but it's apparently been at every home game for the last like 20 plus years. He goes on the road with the team. Wow. They're throwing it around after every run. Dugout was high energy, just a really fun group all around, and kind of easy to pull for. So great weekend for UCI.
Yeah, one guy who I thought stood out to me just from watching those games was James Castagnola. Just another guy who I think is kind of fortifying and galvanizing for that UC Irvine team. But yes, very impressive stuff from them. For me, you kind of hit on Texas, and so I will say briefly that Texas was the team that I saw in person that I kind of was like, okay, these guys look pretty good. Clemson, I would also give a nod to as well. Cam Cannarella is really a great center fielder, and I think, you know, for people who haven't seen him play defense in person, it really is something. You know, I saw him track down a ball that was hit off the top of my head. It was like 107 at a 21-degree launch angle to straightaway center, and in the major leagues last year, balls with that batted ball profile had a, I think it was a 650 batting average, and Cannarella got to it, I would say, relatively easily. And so that was just one thing that's like, it's hard to ignore when you watch that guy play defense, and he is such a good player. But I have to go with Louisville as the team that I saw in person that really caught my attention. They didn't quite get into our top 25, which we'll get into in a bit. But I thought that was a really competitive team that I maybe wasn't even expecting. You know, in all fairness, I think that they have a solid roster. I don't know that you or I really expected them to be like hyper competitive with the top of college baseball. And they certainly look like they had the tools to do exactly that in Arlington. They were able to beat Texas on opening day, which I thought was a really quality win. It was an extra inning affair. It was very exciting, 4-3. A bad loss to Oklahoma State on day two. They lost 12-3, looked reasonably uncompetitive. And then they bounced back and got a second top 25 win against Arizona, 13-1, a run rule blowout. So impressive stuff, but I have to highlight one player, and that's righty Patrick Forbes. If there's one guy in my mind throughout the entire country, Peter, who moved up significantly in terms of their draft stock and people's opinions of one individual, it has to be Patrick Forbes from this weekend. He went five innings. He struck out 11. He got 11 whiffs on a fastball that was up to 98 miles per hour with great carry through the zone. He had a slider that really tightened up and looked awesome this weekend that we haven't necessarily seen consistently. The whiffs were there. He was generally around the zone. And I thought he was a guy who looked like a potential top two, three-round pick. And we currently have him in the 170 range on our BA top 200 for the 2025 draft. If you ask me, he looked like a top 85 prospect in the first weekend of college play. There's a long way to go and a lot more for him to prove, but that was certainly a loud debut for the season and kind of a, hey, look at me outing, in my opinion. So if I had one takeaway from Shriners, in my mind, it has to be just how good Patrick Forbes looked, because I was thoroughly impressed.
I'm happy you brought up Louisville, and not to pat myself on the back, but in my first installment of the What to Watch for, I said, I think the Cardinals, verbatim reading from it, I think the Cardinals have the potential to win a pair of games this weekend. So I'm happy they made me look smart. I was very impressed with them. I mean, it's clear, like, they're going to be a competitive group, and I mean, they look every bit of a likely regional team when all is said and done. I think the lineup, it has star power with Zion Rose, but it's also 1 through 9. I mean, I think it's a pretty solid unit. I don't think it's going to blow you away, I guess, from a name perspective and necessarily tools perspective, but a lot of guys have a real hitterish look. Like Matt Klein has a knack for being on the barrel. Lucas Moore can really run, and brings bat to ball ability and speed to the middle half of the lineup. Garrett Pike was an impact transfer from Toledo. It's just getting Eddie King back was huge. So like Zion Rose is obviously the guy, but there are some key supplemental pieces in there as well. And Patrick Forbes, I think, from a pitching standpoint down at Shriners, probably won the weekend, even Absolutely. For as good as Jared Spencer looked. I mean, watching it on even just watching on my laptop, I was sitting there being like, holy, can't say the word on the pod, but it was like, wow, like very, very real stuff. Explosive look on the mound, fastball, as you said, up to 98, big time life at the top of the zone. Slider really flashed, competed around the zone. I mean, everyone was kind of wondering, you know, what would the like Friday night version of Patrick Forbes look like this spring? Because he had mainly been their guy in relief last season, and it was a really strong first impression. He definitely fits in that third to fifth round bucket for me in July, probably closer to the third when all is said and done than the fifth. We'll see how he throws the ball the rest of the way. But I mean, he's got a real chance. You know, that fastball slider combo is legit. It's just a matter of honing in on that third pitch and continuing to, you know, have that competitive pitch percentage remain high. And then I think furthermore on that pitching staff, Tucker Bivens, another legit guy, sinker slider combo, USA guy over the summer. Colton Hartman showed flashes as a freshman, threw the ball well against Arizona. And then there are a number of other guys like Brennan Cutts, I think, provides a lot of depth to the staff. Used the Missouri Valley Pitcher of the Year in 2024 with Indiana State. They used him in relief this weekend. So just a very solid personnel group for Louisville in an opening weekend that I think that they should feel thrilled about.
I would tend to agree with that. And I would also say, yes, Patrick Forbes certainly looked the part. And just to add real quick, Zion Rose, one of our top 30 prospects for the 2026 draft, had a really nice weekend, and he went 6-for-13 at the plate and certainly impressed. Although I will say this, everybody kind of knew what Louisville had in Zion Rose. I think Patrick Forbes is a little bit more of a surprise. Peter, let's move on to my favorite section today that I'm sure everybody who's listening to this will agree with everything we're about to say here. It is top 25 talk time. First top 25 we dropped on Monday. It's a new group. We had some movement. I would say that we actually had some significant movement after the first week of the season, which I think is somewhat rare. I will explain just off the top kind of our thought process, and I'm speaking a little bit for Peter here because obviously he and I do that together. One thing that was a goal this week was to not have too much movement. So for those of you who are looking at the top 25 and you go, whoa, Virginia lost to Michigan in the first game of the season. Well, Virginia also went on and then beat Villanova and Xavier in the games that garnered consideration for the first week. So was it the most impressive weekend? No, not necessarily, but it wasn't enough for us to move them any further than from 5 to 7. We dropped them 2 spots and felt as though that was sufficient. And I would even go as far as to add that that movement down was because I thought, and I think Peter would agree, that Florida State and Florida, which jumped Virginia, just had more impressive weekends. We didn't move Virginia down because Virginia had a bad weekend. We moved Florida and Florida State up because they had great weekends. The only team in the top 25, in my mind, that really, or well, there are three, but the three teams that really moved due to their results and not movement as a byproduct of other people's results were Duke. Duke dropped 2 of 3 against Cincinnati in the last game. There was a blowout. That was very surprising. Cincinnati, we had finished 10th in the Big 12 going into the season, and they beat the brakes off of Duke. So they dropped from 10 to 18. We have Arizona. They were 22 going into the weekend, and they dropped out of the rankings completely. They didn't win a game. And the same can be said for Indiana. Didn't win a game out in Arizona, and they dropped from number 25 out of the rankings entirely. So those are the three teams that had considerable movement as a byproduct of their own actions. But Peter, let me go to you first here and just kind of give me your top 25 thoughts. What were some things that factored in for you? What were the areas that you were keeping a biggest eye on? And I will also ask you, what was kind of the main factor for you in evaluating where teams needed to end up in their second week of the season?
Yeah, I think you and I will align on really everything I say, because it was we were in lockstep for most, if not all, of our ranking process on our Sunday night call. But I think starting with you, and it's a key point to remember, not only this week, but also as the season rolls on, is it's so much different from a sport like college hoops or college football, and that 1 week is not going to necessarily, of course, it's not going to kill your season, and it's even not going to, you know, kill your ranking. Like you said, it's not 1/12 of your season. We're talking about whatever it is. So teams aren't really going to get killed if they go 2-1 versus 3-0. It's more so how they did it. So I guess in that breath, we're talking about Florida State and Florida going to 5 and 6 respectively. It was more so how they looked. We touched on Florida State's dominant pitching performance. You can say the same about Florida. They also swung the bats really well. Virginia opening day loss to Michigan. Then they go out and kind of squeak by Villanova before shutting out Xavier. So I think the how of Florida State and Florida benefited them. And then with Duke, I don't want to necessarily hold one bad weekend over Duke's head, but explaining the drop from 10 all the way to 18 after the logic I just gave, they, like you said, Cincinnati took it to them. And it was their one win was in 12 innings on Saturday. And even that was, you know, it was a real battle. So, I mean, they very well could have gotten swept. So I think that 18 was a solid floor for them. It's obviously not the end of the world to go out and kind of lay an egg on opening weekend, but very curious to see how they bounce back. So those are the two big themes. And then just as kind of working through the rankings, obviously Arizona and Indiana, I think everyone would agree those are kind of logical teams to drop out. Arizona, I think they got outscored, if my math serves correctly, 31-7 over the course of 3 games down in Arlington. That's correct. That's a weekend you got to flush ASAP. Indiana ended up going 0-4 out in Arizona when all was said and done. So, I mean, when you take into account the results and sliding Duke to 18, everyone else kind of naturally just slides up. It really wasn't too difficult, I'd say, a process. We had Kentucky fall from 20 to 23 with the split with Lipscomb. And that made way for teams like UCSB and UC Irvine to slide up. So it all kind of, as you work your way through the rankings, it all kind of slides into place. Some weeks are going to be more difficult than others. But, you know, the pieces to the puzzle, or the puzzle kind of solves itself as you work your way through this thing. But in terms of the teams that jumped in, not to steal your thunder, but TCU was a no-brainer, and then we debated Michigan along with a handful of other teams.
Yeah, and I would even add just something to you said right there. Kentucky dropped to 23, and that wasn't even necessarily a byproduct of the fact that they split with Lipscomb. It was unfortunate that they didn't get to play a third game, because I think that would have been valuable to see. But I would just go as far as to say that Dallas Baptist, Irvine, and Santa Barbara all had weekends that deserved a little bit of helium. Not a lot, by the way. Each of them moved up, I think, a collective one spot, you know, a piece. And Kentucky just didn't do anything to move up or stay the same. It wasn't that we dropped them. It was more that the three teams that I just mentioned had better weekends, and the eye test told us that those guys should move up slightly. And I will also add this, you know, the rankings have two main components to them in our minds. And Peter and I had a discussion about this on Sunday night when we were, you know, making up our first in-season ranking. There's an element to it of what did each team do? So what were the results of the game? And that's as simple as did they win or did they lose? What was your weekend record? And then there's also some future projection to this. And we were trying to be able to forecast out who we believe to actually be the number one team in college baseball over the course of the season. And that's why, for example, you know, Texas A&M didn't blow the doors off of Elon on opening night. That was a really close win and a very valiant effort from Justin Mitrovich and Elon. But that didn't constitute moving them out of the number one spot, because we still firmly believe that that's the best team in the country. That's projection. And so there is an element to that. You know, people are asking, well, why is Duke still in the rankings? Duke is still in the rankings for two reasons. Like we explained, it's only one weekend and three games. It's about 5% of the season. There you go, Peter, on the math. But at the same time, you know, we still believe Duke to be a team that should be in the host conversation at the end of the season. They're talented enough to be there. That's not a team that drops out after just one bad weekend where they go 1-2. So that's really important for us to mention. You know, as far as you know, big movers go in the top 25, talk to me, Peter, about Cincinnati. Cincinnati has a great weekend against Duke. Like I said earlier, we picked them to finish 10th in the Big 10. In the Big 12. Why not in the rankings? I'd like to give people kind of a look here as to why teams like Louisville and Cincinnati or Coastal Carolina, which went, you know, 4-0 over opening weekend, why didn't those teams get in for us? I'll take your answer, and then I will try and supplement it, although I think you're probably just going to knock it out here. So why don't you drop that for us?
Yeah, I think, you know, Cincinnati, Louisville, Southern Miss, Coastal, Oklahoma, there are a cluster of teams that we talked about at 24, 25. They're right there on Sunday. They're right there as we speak. In all honesty, they're probably going to make their way into the ranking as the season goes on. But I think it was more just the how Michigan and TCU did it. TCU coming into the season, I believe, was our first team out of the ranking. They went out west and swept San Diego. So it was a little weird with how the schedule worked this week. We had a lot more Monday games than we'll have until regionals start in June. So TCU, they swept the weekend, and then the series didn't even end until Monday. So they went 3-0 Friday to Sunday, beat a really, really solid San Diego team, a team that we believe is going to compete, is going to be one of the more competitive teams out west. Michigan, they get a huge opening day win and extra innings over number five Virginia. They complete the sweep of the weekend. Obviously, it didn't play into the ranking, but each of them also won their Monday games. So it was more just the how of, you know, how TCU did it, and then Michigan, the quality of victory beating a top five team is obviously very, very impressive. So I think that carries a little bit more weight over perhaps a series win in and of itself. But I mean, again, we debated Cincinnati for a while. Southern Miss is also off to a strong 4-0 start. Coastal Carolina's right there at 4-0. So, I mean, it's going to be a not to speak and project on this weekend or say what's going to happen, but I have a feeling that, you know, we'll be talking about and debating and probably slotting in a handful of teams as soon as next week, depending on how this whole deal shakes out.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one thing I'll add, this goes back to what I was saying, where we don't want one weekend of games to single-handedly reshape our opinions of teams. And for a team like Cincinnati, it's a great weekend. Don't get us wrong. I mean, Cincinnati took itself from a team that wasn't really in the top 25 conversation even remotely to a team that, like Peter said, we had a pretty lengthy conversation about whether or not they belonged in the top 25 after a week. But I think it's important to kind of maintain our opinions because things don't really change. Again, like I've been trying to say throughout this entire podcast, things can't and don't really change after just three games. And so while we're really encouraged by Cincinnati and we have them kind of in that group of teams that we got to keep an eye on now, it doesn't change exactly who we think they're going to be. I mean, we, like I've said, put nine other Big 12 teams in front of them in our preseason standings for a reason. That hasn't drastically changed. And now you have to kind of try and walk that fine line of, do you get very reactionary to the results of three games and move a team like that into the top 25? Or do you weigh in things like projection, which don't really change based on what we said in the preseason? So you have to be careful, of course, with giving too much weight to results and giving too little weight to results. But we felt as though it was appropriate in Cincinnati's case to maybe just wait and see one more week. And they're going to have every opportunity to climb into the top 25. And the same can be said for several teams here. I think that Southern Miss is a great example of a team that isn't in the top 25 yet, but easily could be with a quickness. I mean, they play Mississippi State here in a couple hours, and Peter and I are recording this on Tuesday afternoon, and that's a great midweek matchup that people are going to want to pay attention to. And it's a matchup that you and I are going to be paying attention to because it'll immediately be a factor in how a team like that does in the rankings. Louisville, great weekend at Shriners. They had a couple wins over two, you know, top 25 teams, which was impressive. Things that came into my mind, they beat Texas, which was a big deal, and then they beat the brakes off of Arizona. But the reality is Arizona fell out of our top 25 for a reason. They didn't win a game. That has to count for a certain amount of weight, and it did. So, you know, we have those teams in our next five out. It's not getting published, but Peter and I are ranking 30 every week for this exact purpose. We want to make sure that we're having kind of a consistent big picture outlook when we're trying to create the top 25, and teams like Cincinnati and Louisville and Southern Miss and Coastal are in that range. So they're right there knocking on the door for the top 25. Like Peter said, we're certain that at some point this season, teams of that caliber will make their debuts within our rankings. But right now we felt as though the best course of action was let's just wait and see. Peter, I'm going to now move on to what has quickly become a favorite of mine, and that is our picks to click segment. It is where Peter and I once a week will pick one player from the entire country to click and have a big impressive week. Last week Peter picked Chris Arroyo, the two-way player from Virginia. I went with Jason Wrights, the tall righty from Oregon. We are having prospects extraordinaire Carlos Collazo be the arbiter of picks to click. He is choosing the winner each week, and Peter and I will keep score, and I will now flash bang the score across the bottom of the screen for those of you who are watching. Carlos gave me the win. Jason Wright threw three shutout innings and struck out five. Chris Arroyo had a nice weekend, though. He left the yard in on opening day against Michigan. Not a bad performance either, but Carlos gave me the slight edge, so it's 1-0 me. And Peter, without further ado, give me your week two pick to click.
Yeah, big opening weekend for you, a tone setting win. It's always nice to start off 1-0. So I got to bounce back. And I'm going to take Clemson. Speaking of bouncing back, I butchered the transition. I'm going to take Clemson righty Aiden Kanock. On opening day, he kind of struggled against Oklahoma State. Ran into some trouble, cruised through the first couple of innings, and then got hit around in the third and fourth innings, respectively, allowed four earned across four innings pitched. I think he's going to bounce back with a really, really strong start. He's got one of the best changeups in the 2026 class to go along with a solid fastball and a big curveball with some sharpness. So impressive arm with impressive stuff. I think he's gonna right the ship in week two, hopefully, and also right the ship for me on the pick to click scoreboard.
Well, I'm going to give this is exciting because this week is going to be a little bit more of an apples to apples comparison. Last week we went hitter and pitcher. This week we are both going pitchers, and I will add, we don't talk about this before the show, so I have no idea who Peter's going
exactly
with, and he has no idea who I'm going with, which I think keeps this interesting. I am going with Justin Mitrovic, the right-handed pitcher, Friday night starter from Elon. He looked excellent with 5 shutout innings against Texas A&M, gave Elon a real chance at an opening day upset against our number one team in the country. And this week, the task gets a lot easier. He's facing Binghamton at home. I think that this is the opportunity that Mr. Mitrovic is looking for some sort of explosive outing. He's in our top 200 for this upcoming draft at number 199, low 90s fastball, but he's around the zone. Some decent off-speed pitches headlined by a changeup that we would regard as pretty close to plus. And Peter, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's a flashy changeup.
Oh, yeah.
And that's my pick to click.
Go love that pick with Mitrovic's changeup for me, comfortably plus, one of the best in this year's draft at the college ranks. So I'm with you. I was impressed with how he looked on Friday against A&M. It was hard not to be giving him a chance to win. Fastball looked better, especially from a shape standpoint. The changeup's the moneymaker with him. So I like that pick a lot. I think you've got the opponent also playing in your favor a little bit as well. So I have a good feeling he's going to go out and throw the ball well.
And I'll also add, just for all of you draft nuts out there who are listening to this, kind of an interesting pick-to-click matchup, not just because it's two pitchers, but it's an interesting pick-to-click matchup because these are two pitchers who rely on the same pitch. Aiden Knock and Justin Mitrovic are two plus changeup guys. I mean, I would even go as far as to say that Knock's changeup is sniffing that double plus category, but just a really good changeup head-to-head matchup here between our two pitchers, Peter.
Yeah, battle of the combos. I love it.
All right. Well, any final thoughts, Peter, before we wrap up the week two Baseball America College Baseball podcast?
Yeah, I wanted to circle way back, actually, and just give some credit to Ole Miss because I think nice. That there were a lot of impressive performances down in Arlington, but I don't think any team, I wouldn't say desperation is the right word on week one, but after the last couple of seasons that Ole Miss has had, they really, really needed a strong start with a couple of quality victories. And they did just that down in Arlington, led by Luke Hill, had a 2-homer game, 6 RBIs. He led the charge offensively. Hunter Elliott getting him back on the mound and healthy was huge. And he threw 5 shutout innings. So, I mean, this is a huge year, as we touched on in Oxford, and you couldn't have asked for a better start. So I think big ups to the Rebs.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you did that. And I will give a shout out to the weather, because if you want to talk about something that has been dominant, it is the weather. There are lots of teams across the country that have had their games either postponed or canceled. It's freezing across most of the country at the moment, and teams are losing out on games, which sucks. And so I'm going to give a nod to good old Mother Nature for starting off the season hot and creating some delays here. But that is going to do it for us on this week's episode of the College Baseball Podcast. Make sure you're heading over to baseballamerica.com/college if you want all of the best college baseball content out there. Peter and I both have had quite a bit of content. Jesus Cano, going to give him a shout out as well. Carlos Collazo, all of our amateur team guys have been locked in on the start of the college baseball season, and there's plenty for you to read. So again, head on over to baseballamerica.com/college to consume all that good stuff. And that is going to do it for this week. So for Peter Flaherty, my name is Jacob Rudner, and we will see you next time.